ते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 2 एंटाइटल महाराज निमी मीट्स द नाइन योगेंद्रस। दिस इज टेक्स्ट नंबर 47। आचार्याम एव हरये अर्चयाम एव हरये पूजम यह श्रद्धा येहते पूजाम यह श्रद्धा येहते न तद् भक्तेषु चान्येषु न तद् भक्तेषु चान्येषु स भक्ता प्रकृता स्मृता। अर्चयाम एव हरये पूजाम यह श्रद्धये हते न तद् भक्तेषु चान्येषु स भक्ता प्रकृता स्मृता। अर्चयामेव हृदये पूजाम्यः श्रद्धये हते तद्भक्तेषु चान्येषु सभक्ता। अर्चयाम डीटी एव सर्टनली हरये टू लॉर्ड हरि पूजाम वर्शिप यह हु श्रद्धया फेथफुली इहते एंगेजेस न नॉट तत् ऑफ कृष्णा भक्तेशो टुवर्ड्स द डिवोटीज च एंड अन्येशो टुवर्ड पीपल इन जनरल सह ही भक्त प्रकृता मटीरियलिस्टिक डिवोटी स्मरता इज कॉल्ड। ट्रांसलेशन अ डिवोटी हु फेथफुली एंगेजेस इन द वर्शिप ऑफ द डेटी इन द टेम्पल बट डज नॉट बिहेव प्रॉपरली टुवर्ड्स अदर डिवोटीज और पीपल इन जनरल इज कॉल्ड अ प्राकृत भक्त a materialistic devotee and is considered to be in the lowest position. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. We are continuing to read from this purport. This is a very long purport. This is the last part of the purport. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the inability of the Kanishta Adhikari to appreciate the Lord's devotees, entourage and paraphernalia indicates that such a materialistic Vaishnav is still affected by the speculative understanding of Karmavadis and Mayavadis, those who are dedicated to sense gratification and impersonal speculation about the absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada often said that only the impersonalists desire to see Krishna alone. We desire to see Krishna with his cows, his friends, his parents, his gopis, his flute, jewelry, forest scenery, and so on. Krishna is gorgeous in the setting of Vrindavan. It is in the land of Vrindavan that Lord Krishna, surrounded by so many beautiful associates, manifests his exalted, indescribable beauty. Similarly, the unique mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is exhibited in the activities of his pure devotees, who selflessly travel around the universe, distributing the dust particles from Krishna's lotus feet on the heads of the conditioned souls. One who is uninterested in the Lord's paraphernalia, entourage and devotees has a stunted conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This must be due to the contamination from the impersonal and sensuous understandings of life. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur states that after hundreds of lifetimes of faithfully worshipping the deity of Lord Vasudev with external paraphernalia, one realizes the true nature of his transcendental name and mantras, and the bondage of one's materialistic mentality slackens. In this way, as a Kanishtha Adhikari gradually comes to perceive the mental activities of a devotee and tries seriously to advance to a higher stage, his materialistic conceptions will go away of their own accord. He then exhibits loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and makes friendship with the devotees who are the dearmost sons of the Lord. And by appreciating the universal quality of devotional service to Krishna, he becomes very much eager to engage other innocent people in the service of the Lord. Further, he begins to make significant advancement. He becomes inimical to anything or anyone that hinders the progress of his devotional life. And thus, he avoids atheistic people who cannot benefit by good instruction. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness, founded by His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya, 108 Sri Srimad Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada, is so nice that anyone who helps the society immediately engages in the preaching work for the Lord. Thus, there is great facility for the members of this society to come quickly to the second class of devotional service. If in the name of Krishna consciousness, one gives up preaching and instead becomes interested simply in collecting funds for maintenance, he is showing a type of envy of other living entities. This is a symptom of a third class platform. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, verses 45-47 constitute the answer to King Nimi's two questions. What is the nature of devotional service to the Lord? And what are the specific duties of a Vaishnav? Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vande Guru Shri Yutaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragnatam Vitamtam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Padidanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Hare Krishna. Seeking blessings of all the devotees to be able to speak something on this very exalted subject matter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That to this particular section, which is purely about the glorification of devotees of the Lord, is something that is very, very significant and important for us as practicing devotees to understand and meditate on. The last time I gave class, after that, you know, one devotee gave me a very interesting feedback that I should speak slowly, where I spoke too much and too fast. So I'll try my best to see if I can speak slowly today. Of course, that's very much in alignment with what today's purport is, that we should take shelter of devotees and respect devotees and their feedback seriously. So, in this translation, in this verse, we are hearing about how a devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple, but does not behave properly towards other devotees or people in general, is called a Prakrita Bhakta or a materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position. Now, when you read a translation like this, it kind of reminds us of many people that we know, you know. It also could remind us of ourselves, because we apparently are trying to practice Krishna consciousness, we have a lot of attraction towards the deities. But sometimes when we look at devotees, or when we study the behavior of devotees, it kind of gives us other impressions, you know. It kind of makes us think that this is what a devotee is. So it kind of surprises us sometimes. How can a devotee behave like this? So which essentially means that if we find some devotee not really behaving in the best possible way, not just worshipping the Lord, but also having cordial relationship with other devotees, cordial behavior with other devotees, then we know that that person not too advanced, you know, somebody who's not behaving in the best possible way. One time, Vyasadeva was having a bath, and three rishis, they came to ask him some doubts. And as they were standing, you know, so Vyasadeva was having a bath inside the lake, inside the river or whatever, and this sages were standing on the banks of the river. And three times he dunked into the water body. And every time he came out, he uttered two words. First time he went in, came out, uttered two words. Then he went in, came out, uttered two more words. Then he went in, came out, uttered two more words. After hearing these three statements of Vyasadeva, or three words of Vyasadeva, all the three rishis, they felt very satisfied. They got answers to the questions and they left. And it's very interesting, Vyasadeva, without even asking him any questions, he just made three comments and they got the answers to all their questions and they left. So first time when he came out, Vyasadeva said, Kali Sadhu. And then second time he came out, he said, Yoshita Sadhu. And the third time he came out, he said, Shudra Sadhu. And that's it. The sages understood everything and they went back, you know. So the first time when he came out, he said, Kali Sadhu, which essentially meant that, if somebody practices spiritual life in Satya Yuga, it would take, suppose there is one particular spiritual practice and it would take 100 years of practicing to be able to achieve that one spiritual goal. In Treta Yuga, it takes 10 years to achieve the same goal. And in Dwapara Yuga, it would take 1 year to achieve the same goal. But in Kali Yuga, the same thing can be achieved in one day of spiritual practice. That is the kind of benefit that Kali Yuga gives us. So that means, what takes so much time in Satya Yuga can be achieved in Kali Yuga very easily through the process of chanting of the holy names of the Lord. And therefore, Vyasadeva said, Kali Sadhu. Kali is actually the best of the ages. And then he said, Yoshita Sadhu, which essentially means, among human beings, women are the best. Because Vyasadeva said, the entire world is born from women only. And therefore, because the women have to make so much sacrifices for the sake of giving a birth to a child and actually creating the entire entire world, and therefore Vyasadeva actually glorifies that among humans, women are considered to be the topmost. And then Vyasadeva says, Shudra Sadhu, which essentially means among the four Varnas, is considered that the Shudras are the best. Just because they have a natural amount of humility in them, they don't have positions, they don't have power, they don't have control, they don't have wealth. And because they don't have all that, there is a certain amount of humility that resides in a person, which is the prerequisite to be able to practice spiritual life. So essentially, what it means is that sometimes, for us to be able to advance in our spiritual lives, somebody who is in the right disposition mentally, in terms of serving others, in terms of, you know, offering one's best in spite of whatever limitations one has, such people actually are more exalted than anybody who seems to be externally powerful or whatever. So when we look at devotees, when we look at different people we are connecting with, one should learn to look at good in them. So here, Vyasadeva is teaching these sages that we need to look at the best in terms of contribution from others in our lives. The example is given of a swan. The swan has two properties which makes the swan very special. The first property of the swan is that it can extract milk from a mixture of milk and water. It leaves out water and extracts only the milk. And the second property of the swan is that the swan survives by eating pearls. It eats pearls. So which essentially means, if you compare a hen and a swan, you know, the hen tends to eat grains and things like that, you know. But a swan is not interested in grains and anything like that. It's only interested in pearls. Which essentially means, why are devotees, exalted devotees, called paramahamsas? They're called paramahamsas because they have the ability to extract good in a mixture of good and bad. Every human being has good qualities and bad qualities. But exalted devotees have the ability to extract the good and leave out the bad, not really be bothered about the bad. And the second thing is that paramahamsa devotees, exalted devotees, are interested in eating pearls. That means anywhere they see some pearl-like qualities, they try to absorb them, they try to imbibe them in their personal lives. And that is the quality of a paramahamsa devotee. So most people, even amongst devotees, if there is any cause of anxiety, there are only two reasons why a person can be in anxiety. The first reason is that we expect the right things from the wrong people. And second thing is that we see the wrong things in the right people. That's the only cause of anxiety in this world. So whenever we see devotees, the right people, but we see wrong things in them, rather than seeing the right things in them. They may have many right things and they may have many wrong things. But rather than looking at the right things, we tend to look at the wrong things in them. And when we, and unfortunately when we see wrong people, we expect right things from them. And that's why we are in constant state of anxiety. There were two devotees who were arguing. And you know, one person was saying that, I am greater than you. The other person was saying that, I am greater than you. Both were having a very intense argument, who is greater among the two, you know. And finally they said, let's go to the guru and ask who is greater, you know. So they went to the guru and asked him, who is greater among the two of us? The guru said, the one who thinks the other is greater is actually greater. And then the argument changed. You are greater, you know. And the other fellow saying, you are greater. So essentially, a good devotee is somebody who really likes to see good in others. And a spiritual master inspires the disciples, inspires his students to see good in others in spite of seeing, in spite of apparently weaknesses and shortcomings being there. If you study the way in which the entire, all the most important scriptures, you know, that we have in life, whether it is the Mahabharata, whether it is the Srimad Bhagavatam, whether it is the Gita, the whole these three scriptures are based on the fact that somebody wanted to hear from some great soul. Arjun wanted to hear from Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita came out. Parikshit Maharaj wanted to hear from Shukadeva Goswami, the Srimad Bhagavatam came out. And Janmajaya wanted to hear from Jaimini Rishi, the Mahabharata came out. So essentially, the whole idea is, whenever we subordinate our intelligence to hearing from some exalted devotees, we tend to develop the right spirit of devotion, right attitude of devotion. Many times, practicing spiritual life on a mechanical level becomes very easy. But if you want to really advance in our spiritual journeys, we need to really hear from somebody who's exalted, not hear stories, not hear philosophy, but we need to hear the mood of exalted devotees. So when we hear some devotee speaking, especially exalted devotee speaking, what we need to hear is not just the storyline, not just the philosophical points that the devotee is making, but what is the mood of the devotee. So in every class you will find the mood of the speaker comes out very visibly. That's kind of the highlight of the class. That's what makes every class different from other, every speaker different from the other. And therefore, whenever we get a chance to hear from exalted devotees, we need to absorb not just the words, but also the mood with which they practice their lives. And that's what here in this purport, Bhaktisiddhanta talks about how one should absorb the dust from the lotus feet of devotees. Dust from the lotus feet of devotees is not just about dust particles, not just about matter. It's about the consciousness. It's about the mood in which a devotee behaves. One time, there was a conversation between water and oil. So water was telling oil that I am more purer than you. How is it that you always are on top of me? You know, when you mix water and oil, oil floats on top and the water is always below, you know. So the water is telling oil that I am so pure and you are so, you know, contaminated, but you are all always on top and I am below. So the oil said that I have undergone all kinds of tests and suffering. That's why I get to be on top. So he said, in the beginning I was a seed and I was buried inside the earth. And then when I came out and sprouted into a plant, then I was cut and beaten up. Then I was taken to an oil mill, you know, and I was crushed and between stones. Then finally when I came out as oil, then I'm used to burn, you know, candle, burn lamps, and I give light to the room. Because I suffered so much, I get to be on top of you. So essentially, many times, we tend to make comparisons between, you know, other devotees, and we tend to think that, why is this devotee considered to be more exalted or whatever, you know. We have to understand that anyone who is respected in this world, the reason a person is respected in this world is because somewhere in the past, that person has undergone unlimited tapasya. And that fruit of the tapasya is what makes a person respectable naturally by others. And therefore, any time you try to demand for respect, you will not get it. Because respect can't be demanded, but respect is gained by your own tapasya and your own commitment in the past. Srila Prabhupada, the kind of respect that the world has towards him, practically every devotee in ISKCON, the kind of respect that one has towards Srila Prabhupada eternally is going to remain. Because the entire Lilamrit is a demonstration of the kind of tapasya that he has made to create what ISKCON is today. And therefore, any of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, some of the older disciples who have actually taken their energy and time to create what we have today, is something that will always keep them respectable and appreciated. So therefore, anyone who tends to do so much tapasya naturally tends to be respected a lot. And that's the way in which a devotee should be happy in Krishna consciousness. It's very interesting when Sudama, he went to Lord Krishna in Dwarka all the way. When Sudama came back from Dwarka towards his house, when he was walking towards his house, Sudama was having a lot of thoughts in his mind. And if you see from a practical point of view, Sudama didn't get anything in return from Krishna. But when he was coming back from Dwarka to Porbandar, towards his hometown, he was completely satisfied in his mind. He was completely happy. Now, how can somebody be so satisfied and happy when you didn't get anything in return? So Sudama, when he went over there, what he got there was two things. Respect and love. That's all Krishna gave him externally from when he was, on, at least on the journey that he was coming back. So Sudama was extremely happy in his mind because he didn't get anything external, but he got respect and love. This is the secret of how to keep devotees happy in Krishna consciousness. So essentially, great devotees of the Lord don't need anything. What can you give great devotees to make them happy? What can you give great devotees to keep them happy in Krishna consciousness? Because nobody comes to Krishna consciousness expecting some tangible material things over here. What keeps devotees happy in Krishna consciousness is respect and love. That's all. So if in the society of Krishna, of devotees, if in ISKCON, the only thing we can do for each other, only thing we can do for one another is respect and love, that will keep each member, each person happy in spiritual life. Unfortunately, many times, whenever you find devotees leaving Krishna consciousness, devotees giving up Krishna consciousness, find out what is the cause for them leaving Krishna consciousness. You will find only these two things somewhere in the pipeline. Disrespect, lack of love. That's it. It may be in different forms, it may be in different ways, and whatever it is. But the essence is exactly this. Disrespect and lack of love. And the only thing that will keep devotees in Krishna consciousness is this. Respect and love. Here in this purport, there is a whole discussion about how Kanishtha Adhikari tends to appreciate, has an inability to appreciate devotees of the Lord, and such a Kanishtha Adhikari is compared to either a Karmavadi or a Mayavadi, which essentially means, Prabhupada often says that people, impersonalists, want to see Krishna alone, but a devotee, a sincere devotee, advanced devotee, wants to see Krishna with something or the other. You will never find, or you should never find, a photoshopped image of Krishna with a white background. You know, that doesn't make sense. Krishna means there has to be greenery around him, there has to be cows, there has to be peacocks, there has to be deer, there has to be, you know, gopis, there has to be gopas, there has to be so many people. So Krishna is always in a crowded environment. And then, we as devotees, why do we want to be in a secluded environment? So, if we really want to understand Krishna's mood is that he doesn't like to be alone. He always likes to be in a crowded environment, you know. I mean, if you see Govardhan Leela, so many people under that one hill, very crowded environment. But in that crowded environment, there was a lot of comfort. Lot of, you know, satisfaction, a lot of happiness, because they were together with Krishna. And in a sense, when we look at many times in yatras, crowded environments, you know, so not exactly the best thing for us, but at least once in a while, whenever, you know, the need is there, I don't think we should run away from crowded environments, you know, because it may be really frustrating, because, you know, too much crowd and too many people and too many, but without so many personalities around us, it's not really Krishna conscious in the from trying to understand the mood of Krishna in Vrindavan. There are two essential qualities for spiritual life. One is enthusiasm that we can have alone also. If somebody is alone, he can really be enthusiastic also. But the second thing, which is a essential quality of spiritual life, is gratitude. For gratitude, we need people around us. To express gratitude, I mean, you can't express gratitude alone. You can probably express enthusiasm alone. You know, you can show that you're enthusiastic alone. You can go and distribute books alone. You can do so many things alone. But to express gratitude, you need people around you. And the more people you have, the more gratitude you can express. And therefore these two are important qualities for one to advance in spiritual life. It is explained that there are three levels of personalities who, or rather aspects of spiritual life. Just like a doctor has three things. One, for any treatment to happen, there has to be a doctor, there has to be a cure, and there has to be a nurse or somebody to administer the cure. Like for example, you go to a hospital, the first thing you meet in the hospital is a doctor tells you, get admitted, and there will be a certain type of treatment. And once you get admitted, then the treatment begins. But to make sure that the treatment goes on, there has to be somebody who actually administers the treatment on a continuous basis. And therefore, in spiritual life also, the spiritual master is like the great physician. And the practice of dharma, the practice of the regulative principles, the practice of the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, that is like the remedy, that is the treatment. But the sangha of devotees is like the nurse. The sangha of the devotees is like a body that makes sure that the treatment is administered regularly. The spiritual master comes and goes. It's not that the doctor is going to come every, you know, half a day to check whether he has hundreds of people to treat. You know, he has hundreds of hospitals that he is consulting in across the world. So the spiritual master is not going to keep coming and seeing whether the patient is taking treatment or no. He leaves the patient under the care of expert nurses. And therefore, we find that the sangha of devotees is like the expert atmosphere available to make sure that we are taking the remedy nicely. And to ensure that we are in that sangha, we need to really respect the abilities of the devotees to administer the treatment to us. When we look at what is the greatest things in the world, you know, what is the greatest thing that you know, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about, you know, is God the greatest thing? The answer is no. Greater than God is God's holy names. Is God's holy name the greatest thing? No. Greater than God's holy names is the devotees of the Lord. And is devotees the greatest thing? The answer is, greater than devotees is the dust of the lotus feet of the devotees. Therefore, Mahaprabhu, he speaks about Bhakta Padi Duli, Bhakta Padajal, Bhakta Mukha Avashesha, Tina Mahabal. So, it essentially means that when we focus our entire attention on the Lord, connecting with God as a person, yes, that's very important. But how do you connect with God? Through chanting of the holy names. But how do you chant the holy names of the Lord? Because the devotees inspire you to chant the holy names of the Lord. And how do devotees inspire you to chant the holy names of the Lord? By the dust of the lotus feet. Now, what is the meaning of dust of the lotus feet of the Lord? Dust of the lotus feet of the devotee. It essentially means the consciousness and the mood of the devotees. When we absorb the consciousness and the mood of devotees, then we are inspired to stay in touch and respect the devotees. And when we stay in touch and respect the devotees, then the devotees inspire us to chant the holy names. And when we chant the holy names of the Lord, then we develop a relationship with the Lord. And therefore it all begins with absorption of the mood of great devotees of the Lord. One boy came to the Detroit temple. This is when Srila Prabhupada was there. And when Srila Prabhupada was leaving the temple, he was there for some time and he was leaving to another place. This boy, he gave him an envelope, a sealed envelope. And in that envelope, he put all his savings, about $1,850, this is like 1970s, it's quite a huge amount at that time. He put his entire savings in that envelope and he wrote a letter. And in the letter, he wrote, "Dear Srila Prabhupada, I love you and I'll miss you." That's it. He wrote that much and he gave the letter back. And then Srila Prabhupada, you know, he went to another place and then he opened that envelope and he saw that this money was there and there was this letter written, "I love you and I'll miss you." Srila Prabhupada replied back to this devotee, his name was Bhakta Abraham. And he replied, Prabhupada replied back saying that, "I also miss my spiritual master, but I know that if I serve my spiritual master, he is watching me every moment." when this devotee received this letter, he was so touched by this letter that Srila Prabhupada sent that he actually dedicated his life completely to the mission. Now we know him as Indradumna Maharaj. So essentially, Srila Prabhupada, the way he connected with this one single devotee was by showing him the eternal connection rather than just emotional connections with the spiritual master. So we talk about how one who is uninterested in the Lord's paraphernalia, entourage and devotees have a stunted conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This must be due to contamination from impersonal and sensuous understanding of life. It essentially means that when we are unable to see devotees of the Lord as pure and as personalities who are as worshipable as the Lord, when we are unable to see the paraphernalia, entourage and devotees as exalted, then somewhere there must be some contamination of our past. There are four types of problems that are associated with our lives. These are called as four miseries that come into our lives. There are miseries caused by kala or the time factor. There is miseries caused by karma or our actions in the past. There is miseries caused by guna or qualities that we have. And there is miseries caused by swabhava, that means our nature. Guna also means qualities. Guna also means our association with the three modes. So, these four types of miseries are like four walls in a room. So, to stay in a room, there has to be four walls. And that's when it is called a room. So, essentially, these four miseries are always there in everybody's life. Whether you want it or don't want it. Miseries caused by time factor or kala, they can be described in two ways. There are two types of miseries caused by kala. The first type of misery caused by kala is, like for example, seasons. After summer, there is winter. There is rainy season. And then after rainy season, there is winter season. Then again, summer season comes. So these seasons keep changing again and again and again. So there is nothing we can do about these changes. These are all external changes and these are eternal changes. It's not really in our hands. We can't control it. But whenever miseries come through the prabhava, through the effect of kala or time factor, we can reduce these miseries through our efforts. Like for example, if you are facing misery of summer, you put AC on, misery reduces a little bit. If you are facing misery of rains, you take an umbrella, misery reduces a little bit. If you are facing the misery of cold, of winter, you wear a sweater, you reduce the misery a little bit. So essentially, we may not be able to eliminate it, but we can take some action so that we get used to it, or we can kind of tolerate those miseries. The second type of misery that comes from kala is in the form of death. Whether we like it or no, death will come. And after death, birth will come. So essentially, the misery of birth and death continues also. And the third type of misery of kala is the misery of the yugas, the cycle of yugas. These also keep continuing. Whether we want it or no, Kali Yuga is going to come. Whether we want it or no, after Kali Yuga, Satya Yuga is going to come. So it's a cycle. So essentially, each yuga brings a problem of its own. It's not that Dwapara Yuga, there were no problems. And it's not that Treta Yuga, there were no problems. And it's not that Satya Yuga, there were no problems. Each yuga had a unique problem of its own. For those who think that Kali Yuga only has problems, go to Satya Yuga. There are other types of problems that come. You go to Treta Yuga, there are other types of problems that come. So essentially, each yuga has a problem of its own, which we have to learn to deal with it. So the first type of miseries are miseries due to kala or time factor, which we all need to deal with it. Or sometimes we just need to tolerate it. It just comes on its own accord. And we have no control of it. The second type of miseries are miseries due to karma, due to our actions. The problems that are created by karma are very complicated in nature. They are not very simple. Because these problems are created by us only. Unlike the problems of kala, which is not created by us, if we just happen to be there. But the problems of karma is created by us only. And therefore,
we create the problem and then we suffer it only. So it's a very strange type of problem, because it's not created by somebody else, it's created by us only in the past. So most of the times when something goes wrong in our lives, the question is it due to my karma? Because we can never understand which karma exactly we did to have certain type of suffering, you know. So it's not exactly tangibly visible which type of karma it is. But the fact is that whenever we face anything in our life, we can be sure that it is due to some karma of ours in the past. Like for example, when you see a tree without any fruits, it's understood that in future fruits will come. Or when you see a fruit and you don't see a tree, like if you buy a mango, you see the fruit but you don't see the tree. You have to understand that the fruit came from a tree. Even if you can't see the tree, you can only see the fruit, you can't assume this fruit just came like that only. Fruit is there means tree has to be there somewhere. So that means today if you see some reaction, so we are going through some suffering or something in our lives, we understand this suffering is caused by connection to some tree in the past. So that's how we understand the concept of karma. So there are many things like karma where the reaction is visible, but the cause of the reaction is not visible. Why we are suffering like this is not visible. But doesn't mean that there is no tree to it. So these four things, kala, karma, guna and svabhava, these four miseries are there in everybody's life. Kala and karma, to some extent, we don't have too much influence over, because kala is out of our control, and karma is actions that we have already done in the past for which we are suffering today. You know. So we may not have so much control of it. Of course, we can look at future actions and control them, but those future actions are based on guna and svabhava. Guna means our association with the modes, which mode we associate with, depending on that our actions will be determined. And svabhava means our nature. We need to work on our nature to be able to deal with our actions for the future. Nobody in this world can say, I cannot work on my nature at all. I cannot work on my svabhava at all. And nobody can say, I cannot work on guna, the qualities that I have in life. And therefore, when we start working on these two, the prabhava of kala and karma, to some extent, we can learn to deal with them or tolerate them. So essentially, a human body is compared to a house and not a prison in this particular context, when you're talking about these four problems. I mean, other times you can compare it to a prison house, that's fine. That's a different context. But in this context, it is compared to a house. In a house, you need four walls. But interestingly, in a prison also, there are four walls. So what is the difference between a house and a prison? The difference is that in a prison, the lock is from outside. In a house, the lock is from inside. You go into a house and you lock it from inside. But you go into a prison cell, you don't lock it from inside, somebody locks it from outside. Which essentially means, from a house, you can get out of your effort. But from a prison, you can't get out by your effort. Somebody has to release you. Which essentially means that these four walls are compared to the karma, kala, and guna and svabhava are compared to four walls of a house. And once you are inside the wall, there will be suffering. There will be some amount of suffering that will be there. But we somehow can identify the doors and windows if you are inside the house. And you have the facility to open the door and window and walk out of the house. And therefore, these walls of the house should be used properly, or rather, these walls should be dealt with properly. Understand where there is a door and where there is a window so that you can get out of the house eventually. Especially guna and svabhava, the reason I'm talking about it at this point, at this juncture, is because a lot of what we do in our lives, especially in our dealings with devotees, it's based on our guna and svabhava. It's a lot based on the qualities that we have, the modes of nature that we are associated with, and the nature that we cultivate in our consciousness. And these two is a lot determined by the way we associate with exalted personalities. If you associate with exalted personalities, especially through the process of hearing and really intensely absorb the mood in which they are, slowly our swabhav can change, our natures can change, and we absorb the higher nature, we absorb the higher qualities, the higher swabhav. And if you associate with lower nature or lower qualities, that's what we tend to, of course, we already have lower natures and we are already absorbed in lower consciousness. But from here, we need to go to a higher consciousness so that we can at least, see how we can perfect our lives. So, according to the scriptures, there are two types of personalities. I mean, on a very gross and external level, there are personalities who do papa or sin, and there are personalities who do punya or pious activities. Of course, spiritual life is beyond punya and papa. But to go beyond punya and papa, you need somebody who can tell us. Like for example, typically in the scriptures, this scene comes again and again in different ways and different forms, almost in every second story. We find that there are demons and demigods. The demons, they enjoy a lot. They have apsaras, they have wealth, they have palaces, they have huge amounts of things. And the demons want to grab it from them. That's the typical scenes that we see in the scriptures. So essentially, what it means is that to get the body of a demigod, you need to do a lot of punya, pious activities in the past, and then you get the body of a demigod. And to get the body of a demon, you need to do a lot of papa in the past, therefore you get the body of a demon. But essentially, the question is not whether we do punya or papa. The question is, what do we want to achieve using punya and papa? What is our goal, in essence? No one does punya and no one does papa to become miserable in life. Everybody does punya and papa to become happy in life. So those who do punya, they think that, for example, the demigods, what is their understanding of happiness? The understanding of happiness is beautiful apsaras, abundant, nectar, celestial nectar, unlimited amount of sense enjoyment, never aging, enjoying unlimitedly. That's their understanding of happiness. So the reason they want to become a demigod so that you can enjoy unlimitedly in the future. Unfortunately, in a human body, you can't enjoy so much. There is a limit to how much you can squeeze out pleasure. Like you can't eat beyond a certain number of gulab jamuns. Like if you eat 3, 4, your head starts spinning. You really start having bad experiences. You can't drink beyond a certain amount. And after a certain amount, you start vomiting. So the human body doesn't give facility to enjoy unlimitedly. So it's not that after eating 4 or 5 gulab jamuns, our desire has gone away. You desire to eat the entire bucket of gulab jamuns. The desire doesn't go away. But your ability to enjoy ends at some point. But in the body of demigods, the ability to enjoy also increases. It doesn't go away. Like for example, we hear of Bhima, powerful personality, drinking buckets and buckets of sweet rice and eating, kilos and kilos of laddus. And we hear all these stories. And we wonder, how does he do it? The reason he does it because he's not an ordinary person. His body is not just an ordinary body. It's a divine body. And therefore he's able to do all that. So now, many people want higher birth simply for enjoyment. But essentially, if you look at the definition of happiness of somebody who does punya, of somebody who does pious activities and becomes a demigod, it is exactly the same definition as somebody who does sinful activities and becomes a demon. Both want to enjoy only. Both want to experience happiness only. So the demons also want to enjoy with apsaras. The demigods also want to enjoy the apsaras. So there is a fight between demons and the demigods. The fight is about who will get more, and the fight is how to get more. And the goal is exactly same. So the demigods, they protect what they have, and the demons steal what they don't have. So the demigods, they are defensive, and the demons are offensive. And the demigods usually lose the war, and the demons win the war. Whenever the demigods lose the war, they become disheartened. They run to Lord Brahma. And what does Brahma tell them? Brahma tells them that you can't win against demons or papa with your own strength. go to Krishna, go to the Supreme Lord, take shelter of Lord Vishnu. And when you take shelter of Lord Vishnu, you will have the strength to fight against Papa. So here, when they come to Brahma and they ask for how to deal with these demons who are Papa personified, Brahma doesn't tell them, you fight with your strength. Because just by the strength of Punya, you can't fight Papa. Because both Punya and Papa have the same mentality, have the same mindset, which is to enjoy. And therefore, you need some shelter of somebody much higher than Punya and Papa. And therefore, Brahmaji says, even I can't help you. Because he's also on the same level as the demigods. So he tells them, go to Lord Vishnu. And by the strength of Lord Vishnu, they have the ability to fight not just Papa, but they also have the ability to fight the desire for enjoyment, Punya. And slowly, that way, they elevate themselves. Now, if you look at this whole mindset between demons and demigods, that's exactly the mindset that we have also in our lives. As devotees, as trying to practice spiritual lives, we also have desire for enjoyment. We also have desire for, you know, certain types of wrong enjoyments. And we're trying to fight against it. Following principles, following, you know, the process of dharma is not easy. Especially in a city like Bombay. There is so much gratification, there is so much opportunity. Therefore, all the time the mind is fighting this battle. Should I side Punya? Should I side Papa? And we are fighting this battle against sin. That's when we realize that our own strength, no matter how much piety we do, we can't fight against this battle against sin. We need somebody or the shelter of something much, much higher than ourselves. And where does the shelter come from? Lord Brahma represents devotees. The devotees who tell us, go and take shelter of Lord Vishnu. It's not your capacity to fight this battle on your own. And when we listen to Brahma-like devotees, interestingly, Lord Brahma is the head of our Guru Shishya Parampara, you know, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So, when we take shelter of Lord Brahma, take shelter of great devotees of the Lord, the devotees tell us, you take shelter of the Lord, Lord Vishnu, and He will help you fight this battle of not just Papa, but He will also help you fight the battle of Punya. Because both are essentially the same thing in one sense. And then slowly we start taking shelter of the Lord and, you know, try to win the battle. Interestingly, spiritual life, bhakti, is all about losing. If you study Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam is filled with stories of people who have been losers. It begins with Parikshit Maharaj, at a young age in his life, loser. Then it goes to the story of the Pandavas. At a young age in their life, you know, they were, after the whole massive battle, you know, 36 years they ruled and then they gave up and they left their kingdom. In one sense, they lost everything they had. Look at the story of Dhruva Maharaj, loser, you know. Story of Prahlad Maharaj, was a loser. Story of Gajendra, was a massive loser. Narada Muni, he lost everything, you know. So the story of all the stories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, somehow or the other, is about losers, you know. But essentially, winning, he makes us believe that we are fully capable. And we don't need God at all. But without losing, we cannot get rid of this belief system. Losing is a very important element in progressing in the path of bhakti. And therefore, the feeling of being capable connects us to pride. And the feeling of being incapable connects us to God. And therefore, time and again, by the effect of kala and karma, we go through so many losses in our lives, so many difficulties in our life, and that time, our guna and swabhav, it interferes. And it keeps telling, no, don't worry, next time you will win, you know. And instead of that, at that time, we take shelter of devotees of the Lord, who tell us what is the right guna and what is the right swabhav to have. Then, over a period of time, we can actually completely transform ourselves and take shelter of the Lord and take shelter of the process of bhakti and purify ourselves. And therefore, struggle is a very important element in a devotee's life, which is introduced by exalted Vaishnavas into our lives. Exalted Vaishnavas sometimes, they force us or they inspire us rather to do something beyond our capacity. Like for example, Nirjal Ekadasi is coming on Monday, you know. I mean, before we really became devotees, we got connected to the Hare Krishna movement. Who ever thought that you could fast for 24 hours, you know? I mean, nobody can even conceive of that. And nobody would think, what is the need for that? But some of the devotees have a nature to push us to go beyond our comfort zone, go beyond our regular, you know, mindset, and take some struggles in our life that can purify us. Like, for example, Duryodhan, when Dronacharya became the commander-in-chief of the army, and the first day of Dronacharya's leadership, Dronacharya fought with Arjun like intensely. And in the intense fight, Arjun kept winning, you know, all the time, you know. And Duryodhan came to Dronacharya later and asked him, you know, you are the guru of Arjun. Everything that Arjun knows, you taught him. How come you're losing with him? And Dronacharya gave a very interesting answer. Dronacharya told Duryodhan that, yes, I know every trick of Arjun. But the difference between him and me is that all these years, I lived a life of luxury and comforts. But Arjun lived a life of struggle. And because he lived a life of struggle, he has more wisdom and he has more realization of whatever knowledge I gave him. And therefore, exalted devotees of the Lord, they make a process, they make a system in which we really are pushed to struggle voluntarily. And when we struggle voluntarily, then what happens is that, in essence, we get purified more and we tend to advance more. And slowly, as we start having faith in the process which these exalted devotees are setting into our lives, we tend to become purified and grow in our spiritual lives. I'll end with one very interesting thought. The thought is that a devotee should be like the wind. The wind has only one important property or one important quality. The main quality of the wind is to keep flowing. It flows, it keeps flowing in whatever direction. But sometimes we perceive the wind as very fragrant and cool. So when a wind blows, especially in summer, cool wind blows, it kind of gives us a very nice experience. Or if a wind blows carrying some fragrance, gives us a very, very exhilarating experience. But fragrance and coolness is not the property of the wind per se. The wind just carries the fragrance and coolness. The wind's only quality is that it keeps flowing. But if the same wind comes across a garbage bin, it can also carry that bad smell, you know, across. You know, if you pass through a garbage bin and a wind blows, that's the last thing you want, right? It can carry the fragrance, it can carry so many things of the garbage bin to us. So the property of the wind is to keep flowing. And therefore, all of us are like the wind who just goes, keeps flowing. But when we flow through the lives of great devotees, or rather when we pass through the lives of great devotees, those great devotees are like the fragrance and the coolness. So when we, you know, hear them and when we are associated with them, we also learn to carry their mood with us. And as we carry the mood of these exalted devotees with us, and then we touch somebody else, that person can experience something exalted and higher. And here in this purport, it's emphasized about how one should really respect exalted devotees and worship them. In fact, much more than we worship just the deities and the Lord. But in addition to that, it also talks about how to be able to worship them, we need to learn to carry their mood, carry their fragrance along with us. And what is the meaning of carrying their fragrance along with us? It actually means absorbing the mood, absorbing the consciousness that these great devotees have when they speak and they share their realizations with us. And slowly over that, as we have these realizations, probably our swabhava and guna can change, so that the miseries of kala and karma that we have anyway going to face, it won't be so miserable. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantharashimad Bhagavatam ki Srila Prabhupada ki jai.